So I'm sure we've heard the adage, if you don't learn from history, you're going to be apt to what? Repeat it. Okay, so we've heard this a lot of times, and if we think about, well, what can we learn from the prophets and the economic situation back then? Well, I think you'd be surprised to know that a lot of the things that we're going to be talking about, you'll be scratching your head and saying, I'm seeing that today. And so another adage is, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Okay, and so we're going to hopefully be able to pick that up in our lesson this evening. So let's really just kind of dive in. So we think about, I'm not a NASCAR fan, but certainly seen enough races. And, you know, if we were all driving our little, race cars of life and we're on the track, and all of a sudden we have some mechanical problem or something and we hit a wall, we may have to pit. We may have to get that fixed. We may be out of the race. It's that serious. And so when we think about this whole idea of money and possessions and the impact that it can have on our lives, it's kind of the same thing. We could hit a wall, and it could damage us. We could get repaired. We could get back out on the road, or it could disable us in a spiritual sense permanently. So that's kind of like where Israel started. They were off to a good start, and then they hit a wall. And we want to kind of back up a little bit and look at where Israel came from. And it wasn't too long ago in our lesson here that we find them in Egypt. They were oppressed. They were slaves for 400 years in the land of Egypt. And just to put that in perspective, how old is this country? A little over 200 years, right? They were slaves in Egypt for 400 years. Think about that. And during that time, they were oppressed. They were poor, peasants. They had nothing, and that was the culture, and that was the environment in which they grew up in. We think about this first generation of people that were delivered miraculously. You remember, through the 10 plagues and through Moses and God's direction, they were able to be delivered, and they became prosperous. We talked about this last time, but it says in Exodus 12, 35 through 36, that the people of Israel had also done as Moses told them, for they had asked the Egyptians for silver and gold jewelry for clothing. And the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they let them have what they asked. Thus they plundered the Egyptians. So how was it that the children of Israel exiting Egypt became rich? They plundered Egypt, and God was behind it. And so they prospered. This is that first generation that saw the Red Sea parted and the deliverance from Israel. Then we hit the second generation where, because of a mistake that they made, they were to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. And then Joshua was put in charge of leading them into the conquest of the promised land. And really God blessed them with strength and prosperity during this time, right at the very beginning. But notice in Judges 1 and verse 28 says, when Israel grew strong, they put the Canaanites to forced labor, but did not drive them out completely. And we see that time and time again. How did that play out for them? As a matter of fact, the next chapter, it talks about a warning to them that because they didn't do as they were instructed, that these inhabitants would become a snare to them. In what way? Idols? What else? Anything else you can think of? What's important in life? Their priorities shifted and changed. And so this set the whole stage for a series of apostasies that we read about in the book of Judges. There were seven cycles of this apostasy that took place, and it kind of repeated itself. They would be oppressed. They would be delivered. And then they would have prosperity. And then that cycle would repeat all over again. And then God would raise a judge up and he would deliver them. And so we see that this is how they started, as a nation of people. Any other thoughts on that? Then they hit a wall, right? So let's think about that. Then we find in 1 Samuel 8 and verse 20, we find that they made a request for a change of leadership. And if we think about a little bit, who was their king prior to asking for a king? It was God. God was their king. And he was in charge. And let's think about the economic situation at that time. God was king. He was in charge. How much money did they pay in taxes? They paid their tithes, right? 10%. But they basically got to keep everything after that and manage it, and it was theirs. But then they wanted a king, and that was their request. And so they wanted a change in leadership. They wanted a change in how things were running, but if we think about God's pattern here, it was probably the most efficient economic system you could imagine in the way it operated. But notice in 1 Samuel 8 and verse 20, it says, that we may also be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. So we go back to Judges and the warning. How did that play out here? How did they get this idea of a king? They're looking around. Well, look at those people over there. Wow, they got a king, and look how wonderful things are going there. We want a king, and we want somebody that is visible. They're earthly. We can see them. And so that was a complete and utter rejection of God's arrangement and his pattern that he had set up and his leadership. And so I always find it interesting that God knew about this decision way before they even did it. If you go back to Deuteronomy in chapter 17, we're not going to read all this, 14 through 20. It says, when you come into the land, talking about the promised land that the Lord your God is giving you, and you possess it and dwell in it, then say, I will set up a king over me like all the nations that are around me. Does that sound familiar? This was many years before this actually happened. I mean, you're not going to sneak one past God. You're not going to kind of like sneak up and pull a fast one. God knows. He knew these people. He knew what was going to happen. And turning your Bibles over to 1 Samuel chapter 8. I want to read this passage here, verses 10 through 18. And they had made this request for a king, but we've also find that there were expectations that they needed to understand with regard to this change in leadership and what impact that would have on the day-to-day lives of the people in Israel. Notice in verse 10 it says, so Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who were asking for a king from him. He said, these will be the ways of the king who reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them to his chariots and to be his horsemen and to run before his chariots. And he will appoint for himself commanders of thousands and commanders of fifties and some to plow his ground and to reap his harvest, and to make his implements of war and the equipment of his chariots. Stop there for just a minute. Think about this. So how was those commanders and those people that were doing this work going to get paid? King's asking for, he needs these things to be done. How are those people going to get paid? Exactly. Okay. So that's how things are going to change. So this wonderful system that they had was all of a sudden going to change, and this king was going to take more than what they are expecting. He will take your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive orchards and give them to his servants. That sounds like eminent domain. You ever hear of that? Government can just take over a piece of property if they want to. And that's kind of the idea here. He will take a tenth of your grain and of your vineyards and give it to his officers and to his servants. He will take your male servants and female servants and the best of your young men and your donkeys and put them to his work. He will take the tenth of your flocks and you shall be his slaves. And in the day you will cry out because of your king, whom you have chosen for yourselves, but the Lord will not answer you in that day. So a pretty grave warning, but a very different system from what they were used to. Just from an economy standpoint, they were used to giving a 10% and then they could take care of everything else with what remains. Now they had to give 10% and then the king wanted his share. Now you got less. And so we're going to see where that plays out to be a real problem later on, as we think about the United Kingdom and the divided kingdom. Any thoughts or ideas on that or questions? That makes sense? Quiet. Okay. So as we kind of think about that, in the United Kingdom, there were three kings. There were Saul, there was David, and Solomon. And during this time, we know that David did all the planning for the building and construction of the temple. Solomon actually did it. But where did all the material and the money and the gold and the silver and all that stuff come from in order to build this temple? Taxes, the people. They contributed. And so they had to give it up in order for Solomon to do this work. And this ongoing burden of pulling people into doing work for the king and at the neglect of other things, perhaps around the house or for their own family, began to cause quite a significant burden, to the point where then there was a division. And notice Rehoboam comes to the scene and takes some bad advice, but notice what he says here. In 1 Kings 12 and verse 4, he says, your father made our yoke heavy. When you hear that, made our yoke heavy, what comes to your mind? What's a yoke? Okay. Yeah. And if we think about this economically, I mean, what was going on? What the king was doing, was that a yoke? It certainly was. And notice what it says. It says, now therefore lighten the hard service of your father and his heavy yoke on us, and we will serve you. What does that sound like? Lower my taxes. Let me keep more of what I have. And but notice how he responded. He says, Rehoboam says, and now, whereas my father laid on you a heavy yoke, thinking about all that construction and labor and everything with building the temple and all the things that they had to do, he says, I will add to your yoke. I'm going to make it worse. You don't like it now. I'm going to make it worse. I'm going to take even more. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions. So we think about, this division of Israel, we certainly know that, and part of that was the whole economics and the system that they were in at that time. So certainly played a big role in that. But now we start seeing the impact of what God said about having a king. So questions or comments, other thoughts? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, God knew that they were asking for a king way before they asked for it. And when they did, he said, this is how it's going to be, right? Yeah, Seth. Right, right. But in Israel, like the gold and the silver and the things they needed for the temple, they contributed. They gave. There were, like Hiram, he contributed and helped out. But that's one of those kind of quid pro quo kind of things, right? Hey, I helped you out with this. I need you to help me out with this other thing. But, that's right, Seth. I think, we find that the people gave, of what they had, and then there were other people that helped contribute to the building of that. Other thoughts? Comments? Okay. So then we kind of shift over into this whole idea or notion, you know, sins associated with kind of the economics that divided the people into classes. So when you think about, as we're heading into, you know, talking about the prophets, we have a situation where there were the haves and the have-nots. And people were divided into classes. You hear all the time in our country talking about class warfare, you know, whether it's race or religion or other things. But, you know, they certainly had their class warfare, so to speak, as well, between the haves and the have-nots. And it became so bad that it pretty much corrupted the whole nation from top to bottom. And so, when we find the prophets, they will constantly harp on this whole idea of people getting rich through various means, right? Whether it's extortion or, you know, through, you know, unfair business practices or oppression of the poor, defrauding of people their wages, you know, using positions of religious authority to get rich. We find that even with the sons of Eli, right? In the temple. I mean, we see this playing out over and over again. And so we see a couple of verses like the ones here. Jeremiah 2 and verse 7, it says, "And I brought you into a plentiful land to enjoy its fruits and its good things. But when you came in, you defiled my land and my heritage an abomination." And in Isaiah, he says, "Woe to those who join house to house and add field to field until there is no more room and you are made to dwell alone in the midst of the land." Kind of sounds like Columbus, right? Joining field to field, land to land, and developers. But when we think about this whole idea of the economy, how can, you know, just thinking about today, how can our economic situation of today result in these type of things and corruption? What do you think? Yeah? Just pick up your newspaper or, you know, read online news or whatever, you can see it, yeah. And so that's true. And, you know, going back to Judges, you know, when God issued that warning, we also find that in chapter 3 of Judges, it says that this generation forgot the Lord. And so when we think about how things can get corrupt. At the end of the day, that's probably the root cause. They forgot the Lord. The first generation saw the plagues. They saw the deliverance. They saw what happened. And the second generation heard the stories and know that it was true. And the third generation wanted to go their own way. Yeah, Craig. No, that's a good point. I mean, if we just think about our parents for just a little bit, right? Very different generation. They grew up, different appreciation for different things. I remember talking to my dad one time, and I was in his garage, and I noticed that he had three saws. Two of them were still in boxes, and I'm like, "What do you do? Why do you have three saws?" "Oh, I got a really good deal on that one and that one. It was on clearance. I got that one for $10. I got that one for $12. I'm like, "But you didn't need it." And so we find that, you know, it just really depends on the environment, economic environment that we grew up in and the influence of culture on that. And we see that playing out here with the children of Israel, the influence of the inhabitants of the land on their very lives, of other people. And it led them away from what was really important. So, other thoughts? Yeah, Seth.
You mentioned Eli. So that was before they got a king.
Yeah.
And they still had corruption.
Yeah.
But then it's just a whole, like, grass is greener on the other side type thing where it's just a whole new corruption now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's more widespread, I guess. But it gets back to they weren't obeying what God said to do when they entered the kingdom.
They forgot God. And they were trying to balance, I want to do just the bare minimum in order to appease God, but I want to do what I want to do. So they were playing that game. Yeah, go ahead. That is it. Okay. Other thoughts, comments? Okay, so there's several verses here that talk about sins that are associated with material possessions and in the prophets, a lot could be talked about here, but I want us to get, you know, kind of an idea of what we see in their culture that was corrupt and what was going on during this time. But more importantly, think about these things as it relates to today, okay? So, you know, worshiping idols of costly materials. And Isaiah 2, it talks about, "In the day mankind will cast away their idols of silver and their idols of gold, which they made for themselves to worship." I mean, where could that material, silver and gold, be better used? I mean, worshiping an idol that will do nothing. I mean, that could have been put to better use. Maybe they needed to buy food for their family or other things, but and then extortion, robbery, oppression, in order to gain land. I mean, people try to cheat other people out of land. I know somebody that lives next door to us down in Hocking County, and she got sick. And she had to go to the hospital, and she's on disability. And her brothers and sisters went in and subdivided the land and sold it off and took the money. I mean, that's how people can be. And so we think about that here. The people of the land have practiced extortion and committed robbery. They have oppressed the poor and needy and have extorted the sojourner without justice. I mean, again, some things just really never change. We see the same kind of thing happening today. Corrupt business practices, scales and prices. So a merchant whose hands are false balances, he loves to oppress, Ezekiel says. So what's the whole idea behind the scales? What do you think? I buy some food, right, and I put it in this basket, and on the other side is these weights that say, okay, that's a pound, or whatever the measurement was, and that costs this much money. Well, if I kind of fake some of those weights or, you know, put my finger on the scale or what have you, then I might be able to make more money, you know, and maybe somebody doesn't get a pound of something, they get something less. That happens even today, right? You go to the store now and you buy a jar of something and you think you're getting 8 ounces and you look at it and it's, wait a minute, they changed it. It's now 7.2 ounces, but they're charging the same price. Have you ever noticed that? Always amazing. Foreclosing on unpaid debt. So Amos talks about this. He says, they sell the righteous for silver and the needy for a pair of sandals. I mean, that's how corrupt things got. I mean, they were, you know, foreclosing on people's property, their houses, you know, taking their oxen or whatever the case may be. I mean, they didn't have tractors. They had oxen and, you know, things that they would need to, you know, be able to get something off the land. And so they were taking money from these people, cheating on wages against those who pressed the hired worker in his wages. And I mean, we see that happening even today, right? You have somebody come and paint your house and, you know, you're like, you know, it's $1,500 to paint this house. When he's done, you give him $800 and say, that's it. I mean, people do that all the time. I'll give you the rest next week. And that never happens, right? People cheat people all the time out of wages. You ever looked at your check? Have you ever noticed some odd thing happen to it ever so often? I have. I have to call somebody and say, hey, this calculation was wrong. Wasn't intentional, but it does happen. Ignoring holy days. When will the new moon be over that we may sell grain, and the Sabbath that we may offer wheat for sale, that we may make a ephah small and the shekel great, and deal deceitfully with false balances? So what was the attitude here? When will this holy day be over? I want to get back to why do I have to go to church on Sunday? I need to go do some stuff. I mean, you see the same kind of attitudes even today. Other thoughts on that? I want us to try to relate some of these things to what we see today. Maybe I didn't give the best examples, but other thoughts on that? Well, there's more. Go ahead. Nope, good point, good point. Other thoughts? Let's look at some more here. So, I mean, this is probably, we could see this abounding today. Living in excess luxury. Okay? Notice in Amos, it says, woe to those who lie on beds of ivory. That must be a really nice bed. Bed of ivory, okay? And stretch themselves out on their couches and eat lamb from the flocks and calves and the midst of the stalls. So what picture do you get in your head when you think about living the life of luxury? Yeah, you know. Anyone watch Hollywood Housewives or one of those Housewives of Atlanta or whatever they are? I mean, lavishly rich, just, you know, well-to-do, nice homes, nice everything. And in our society, it seems to be much like this one. Eat, drink, and be merry. You know, live a life of leisure. Enjoy things. Get more things. And we all, you know, and many people aspire to be that housewife of Hollywood or whatever the case may be, right? Lots of examples of that. Corrupted religious and political leaders. Its heads give judgment for a bribe. Priests teach for a price. Its prophets practice divination for money. Yet they lean on the Lord and say, "Is not the Lord in the midst of us? No disaster shall come upon us." What picture do you get from that? Here's your religious leaders, and they're corrupt. And they're taking money from people, and they're saying, everything's good. You know, it's going to be safe. We talked, you know, in one of our first lessons about the health and wealth doctrine, right? Kind of the same idea. We see people preaching that stuff all the time. You know, big name preachers that we see on TV. And then bribery, usury, murder. I mean, how many times do you turn around and you see somebody killed for $200? Or, you know, $50. It happens all the time. And then the last one, which we're familiar with, robbing God of offerings and tithes. Will man rob God? Yet you are robbing me. But you say, how have we robbed you in your tithes and contributions? And, you know, go back to our first lesson where we talked about, you know, on average, Christians, using that generally, give about 2.2% of their income to charity and to the church. It's not very much, but that's on average. Other thoughts on this before we move on? Just want to get us to see what the prophets were talking about, and then more importantly, how we see that still happening even today. Yeah, Seth.
You go back to Adam and Eve, who had everything they needed, and most of what they could possibly want without having to work at all. And they still found their way out of that
We're satisfied with something for a little while. Then we want something else, right? And so it just kind of feeds itself. Let's think a little bit about Amos specifically. And I'm picking on Amos as a prophet because we see this quite a bit within his prophecy. And he talks about, you know, the splendid houses. We kind of touched on that. He says, I will strike the winter house along with the summer house, and the houses of ivory shall perish, and the great houses shall come to an end. When we talk about the haves and the have-nots, who thought everything was safe and it was secure? The haves. And what does Amos say? The Lord's going to take all that stuff away. Vineyards, therefore, because you trample on the poor and you exact taxes of grain from him, you have built houses of hewn stone, but you shall not dwell in them. You have planted pleasant vineyards, but you shall not drink their wine. So, what does that say about what they were feeling? You know, hey, we got all these goods. We're in good shape, even though we got it from corrupt practices and oppressing the poor. They're benefiting from that. The Lord's talking about taking that away. Wine and feast. who drink wine in bowls and anoint themselves with the finest oils, but are not grieved over the ruin of Joseph. When he talks about the ruin of Joseph, he's talking about who? The other people of Israel, right? Again, talking about this have and have nots. And then we come to this part. It says, woe to those who are at ease in Zion. Where is Zion? Jerusalem, okay? Woe to those who are at ease in Zion and to those who feel secure on the Mount of Samaria. So, again, you have this false sense of security, but that's going to be taken away from. So, who's in control? God is, okay? They're at ease. They think everything's going great, but all those things can be taken away. Fast forwarding to today, you think people feel safe and secure and that we're in a good situation here in the U.S.? You think people feel good about it? General, yeah. Things are going pretty great. But what could happen? Those things could be taken away. And the Lord knows how to do it. So we need to be mindful that we don't fall into the same traps as we see here and find ourselves in a similar situation. So just some key discussion points I wanted to touch on before we kind of wrapped up here. But I want us to think about all of this that we talked about this evening. If we want to, you know, pinpoint, well, what was the root cause of that? What happened? We talked about forgetting God, but it really goes back to the thoughts of the heart. We talked about extortion and all these different things and injustices and sexual immorality and all these things that were going on. These are the things that people can see, but where did it start? Where did this problem really start? It started in the hearts of people. And so, so that at the root cause is you know, what we're seeing is that's really driving these interlinked sins. And one sin leads to another. You may rob somebody and they make you mad and you kill them. Or they want to rat you out and you kill them. Again, these things are interlinked. And then the other thing, moral and economic sins corrupt the entire social order. Were we able to see that from these examples? Who was not impacted in the examples that we talked about? The prophets, but what happened to them? They were killed. Okay, I mean, that tells you how corrupt things. People didn't want to hear the truth about what was really going on. And it didn't fall in line with their narrative or what they were looking for. Notice in Isaiah 1 and verse 4, it says, ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, offspring of evildoers, children who deal corruptly. They have forsaken the Lord. They have despised the Holy One of Israel, and they are utterly estranged. That's a pretty grim description of what's going on with Israel. But who does he address there right at the very beginning? A sinful nation. What makes up a nation? People. You know, the haves, the have-nots, everyone. I mean, he's talking about a whole nation here. And then the other key point is, and we see this tendency playing out throughout the Bible, but when things are not going real well, think about Egypt for just a little bit. People tend to feel more dependent upon God and less prone to sin. But when things are prospering and they're going really great, what tends to happen? People are more attuned to self-sufficiency and pride and arrogance. We see that playing out. And so, we look at that passage there in Hosea, it says, it was I who knew you in the wilderness, in the land of drought. But when they had grazed, I became full. They were filled, and their heart was lifted up. therefore they forgot me. That's what happens, right? When we get our fill and we get satisfied, what tends to happen? We tend to forget about God. And so that's one example. And finally, as we think about the prophets and what they were talking about, they were talking about God's punishment. Punishment of their selfishness, of their greed, of their covetousness, of all those things that we talked about earlier. Notice Jeremiah, what Jeremiah says. It says, "For wicked men are found among my people. They lurk like fowlers lying in wait. They set a trap. They catch men like a cage full of birds. Their houses are full of deceit. Therefore, they have become great and rich." And, of course, we know that Jeremiah, the weeping prophet, was there when Jerusalem was overtaken, and he has witnessed these very things happening. Proverbs 28 and verse 20 says, "A faithful man will abound with blessings, but whoever hastens to be rich will not go unpunished." When you think about that passage, I think about, for the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. It's the same kind of idea, right? And so we talked about, God is in control of nations. We see that throughout the prophets that we talked about. What happened to Israel? It was prophesied that they would be taken away into Assyrian captivity, and that's exactly what happened. What about Judah? They were prophesied that they would be taken into Babylonian captivity. That's what happened, and that a remnant would be returned. So God is in control, and we shouldn't ever forget that. No matter how good or how bad things are going, God is in control. And other thoughts or ideas before we wrap up. Does that make sense? Okay. Next week we're going to be shifting over to the New Testament. We're going to begin to look at some of the things that we can learn from what Jesus had talked about. And so that lesson is out in the back if you don't have one.